This is the Experience Points Podcast, episode 107 for December 8th, 2010.
Experience Points Podcast. I'm Scott Juster.
I'm George Albor.
We're the co-creators of experiencepoints.blogspot.com, website created and dedicated to the serious but not humorless analysis of video games and culture. And every week in the podcast, we take a look around the internet, see what folks are writing. This week, we found something on Gamasutra. It's an article titled History, Mystery, and Story: Games and the 10-Minute Rule. It's written by Leanne C. Taylor, and she uses the 10-Minute Rule that the film industry uses to talk a little bit about how games capture people's attention and get them prepared to play. Just as a quick explanation, the 10-Minute Rule is audiences watching a movie will generally be able to tell whether they want to keep watching that movie after 10 minutes based on various exposition and plot development. It's a way to hook people into it.
I had forgotten that this rule even existed.
It's kind of a loosey-goosey type of, you know, it's like conventional wisdom, I guess, rather than a fast, hard,
That's true. But it feels like, judging by the sort of action-oriented films we get, we have a glut of in the film industry, it feels like 10 minutes is maybe too long. I'm surprised it's not like 2 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're, you know, watching Transformers 2 or something like that, because you already know why you're watching it. But I mean, there is enough time to set up the story and introduce the characters and see what they're, you know, at least the direction of the movie, like the themes that they're going to be dealing with. She takes a look in the article about how games might be able to do something similar. She talks about outside of the game as far as advertising and marketing, inside the game, cinematics, how they relate to gameplay. So there's a lot to go into here. Where do you want to start off?
Well, I guess I'm interested in this idea that we have to have this 10-minute mark in order to hook people, right? Mm. In films, the idea is that if you don't hook them in 10 minutes, they're going to be bored, they're going to be listless, they'll either leave the room, change the channel, you know, walk out of the theater because...
Go to sleep.
You know, don't be a menace to society, it's just too bad of a film. Yeah, they'll fall asleep, you're not going to be able to maintain. And people are going to give up, essentially. And it's interesting because the 10-minute rule is basically founded upon the idea that we only have so much patience, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we need to somewhat defend the comparison, because I feel like games are so, there's so much there to explain. You know, she briefly mentions game mechanics towards the end, but, even just the story elements of a game, you're playing this thing for up to, 40 hours. Mm-hmm. Is 10 minutes really the same rule we want to apply for games when there's such a longer endeavor?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting distinction, because she goes into if the player isn't grabbed by a game's story after the opening cinematic and maybe the tutorial, then there might be a problem here. So maybe we should transition away from timing and into like chunking, like sections of a game or something.
Yeah, but even that, how do you know what section you're in? I mean, as a player, you're going to have to be hooked eventually.
Well, maybe there's a problem about assuming how literate people are and how many games that people have played. Because if you play enough games, you can generally get a sense of, oh, this is the tutorial mission. Or, I still haven't started the real thing yet.
Yeah, and I think maybe that tutorial mission is where the rule can apply. If they don't, almost all games have them. I can't imagine. I suppose there are a few where, there's not really a obvious tutorial. Mm-hmm. I suppose that could be a good segment to say, well, that's the 10-minute segment. If you don't hook your players by the end of the tutorial, then that's that. But mm-hmm. a lot of games that doesn't really match up either. Something like Gears of War 2, they have a great tutorial, but at the end of the tutorial, there's a huge action segment. That's the hook. It's not the tutorial, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are familiar with the game as it is.
But there are enough, I mean, there's enough there to get people familiar with the idea of taking cover, of aiming down the sights versus shooting from the hip, and then a little bit of time to apply it. I mean, it seems to me that's just an extension of the entire taste. Like, you're trying to give someone a taste of what the rest of the experience is going to be like.
Yeah.
So we might not, I don't know, I guess we might not want to separate those two things.
That's true. Do you think that gamers have less patience, though, than film watchers?
Because it's such a subjective thing. I mean, I know some people will get, you know, hung up on a loading screen and be like, forget it.
Yeah,
gone. <yeah. laughs> I'm done. You know, like,
I mean, even the fact that she mentioned cinematics, there's a lot of games that just don't have cinematics anymore. None. You know, they'll dump you into the game right off the bat.
But I took from her article that, I mean, her article seemed very modern, like a very modern take on how people relate to games, which is through cinematics. I mean, like an arcade game like Pac-Man, you know nothing about what it is. It's purely mechanical. Or like, how does a player get a taste of what Super Mario Brothers is like just by jumping into World 1-1?
I just don't know how much you can hook a player with cinematic alone.
Mm.
I mean,
well, let's take a look at one of her examples. Okay. With she has one of the advertisements for Halo 3. And it's like one of those like ridiculous Pepsi like Mountain Dew Dorito ads.
Fuck yeah, dude! Master Chief on a Slurpee, I'm hooked.
But I mean, that's why they did it. I mean, remember the epic advertising campaign of Halo 3? I mean, the point is that Halo 3 did its, did its pre-gaming outside of the actual game.
Yeah. Well, I guess, but it's a certain type of appeal, right? That's not really based upon anything in the game in the slightest, other than, I suppose, the graphics to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
The
story, I felt like those, I mean, didn't you feel like those advertisements were essentially cutscenes or what other games would use as cutscenes?
You mean the commercials for the game?
Yeah, not the Pepsi crap, but like the, the old man walking through the museum from the Halo Wars or the funeral pyre or any of those other live action shows.
Or even Master Chief like falling from the sky or waking up in the field.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. But those commercials tie into a particular way that the game is trying to hook. And she lists three ways that games can explain to someone through a cinematic, or rather can appeal to people through the cinematic in certain ways. And the first is history, which is just, you know, in asking the player or getting the player to think about, well, what has happened? What has happened in the past that I'm now interested in playing through and viewing in the game? The other is mystery, meaning like what's happening now. And the other is story, of course, what's going to happen. And all of the Halo commercials, I think, were based upon that story element, right? What is going to happen to the Master Chief whom we're already familiar with, right? So to some extent, we're already hooked into the Halo franchise. And it's not from the commercials. It's from Halo 1, Halo 2. So when Halo 3 comes out and those commercials are playing, the only thing it's appealing to is the fact that I've already played the games and I want to finish it. You know, I want to know what's
when you put
next.
It that way, I can really... Yeah, I mean, they seem pointed directly at folks who already know who Master Chief is.
And don't get me wrong, that's a form of a hook. And, you know, Taylor mentions that that's probably the most difficult hook to pull off. And I would actually completely disagree. I think that's the easiest hook to pull off. If you've got a successful IP, all you need to do is just advertise to the people who've already played it.
Hmm. Yeah, you're riling up the base, essentially.
Yeah. And that's a weird thing to me, because I feel like we don't need a 10-minute hook for that. That could come whenever. We don't need, you know, there's not... I find it hard to describe it even as a hook.
Mm-hmm. Well, are there any games that have used cinematics that have, pushed your interest further even before you've taken control of it?
Pretty much all the Final Fantasies, definitely, yeah.
Mm.
Because, you know, it was a... It would... Like, say, Final Fantasy... Final Fantasy VII, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even that opening, I would say even that opening scene when they first blow up the reactor in Midgar. Oh, yeah. I would say that's a perfect example of a 10-minute mark. Because we get this excellent cinematic, and then we get some gameplay, and then after that gameplay happens, I believe that's when they actually show the title splash, right? Mm-hmm. That's when it shows Final Fantasy VII, and you see the city in a larger, kind of more dramatic thing. There's this large explosion. You don't know where you're at. So it's combining actually a lot of the elements that I think she says makes a good hook.
Mm-hmm. And in the proportions that she was describing as most fit for getting people engaged. I mean, you know a little bit about what's going on in Final Fantasy VII, but you don't know much about the history, like where you are and what has already happened. All you know is like that it's been implied that this is an industrial place and whatever. But then, you know, you're really put into a place that you have no idea actually how Midgar is run, but that makes you more interested in figuring it out.
And that's the mystery segment of her description.
Yeah. I'd say.
But take something like Final Fantasy 13, right? That's the latest one, right?
Mm-hmm.
The opening cinematic for Final Fantasy 13 is gorgeous, but there's so much going on, and there's a lot of, at least personally, I felt really confused by the world. And the first 10 minutes, the first 4 hours don't give you, I don't think personally, I didn't find it hooked me in the slightest. You know, there was a lot of weird things going on, and it was interesting and to some extent familiar to me because I've played through past Final Fantasies, but, you know, it didn't grab me in the way that other games have grabbed me instantaneously, you know? And I think, was it Dan Bruno? Someone wrote about the way that Final Fantasy XIII dramatically changes gameplay at 15 hours. I think you could say that's probably the hook point. You know, once you leave the first planet, and then the game becomes something very different.
Sorry, the only reason I'm laughing is that I didn't know that Final Fantasy XIII took place across multiple planets.
Oh yeah, I think one's then maybe a moon. It's like a husk of a thing. It's really confusing.
I mean, that's a larger issue of how long games can be and how long we're willing to, as players, to put up with not necessarily being shown a representative sample of what the game's going to be like.
Well, what do you think is the longest you've put up with a game waiting to get to that hook moment before you actually got there and were satisfied?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple, and I wasn't, you know, completely dissatisfied while playing it, but when I was playing Silent Hill Shattered Memories, and I got to the end, the very end of the game where everything wraps up, it radically changed everything I thought about what was going on throughout the entire game. And in retrospect, I liked that game a lot more 2 seconds after it ended than I did when I was ever really playing it.
Did you feel like you were forcing your way through up until that point?
At times, definitely. I mean, if anyone else has played that game, I mean, when those ice monsters and I'm sorry, when those ice sequences start and the weird flesh monsters start attacking you, like, it's not so much scary as it is just monotonous and annoying.
Absolutely.
But like I was happy that I pushed through it because they made everything make sense, and actually they made it, that game made everything more intriguing in retrospect, which is a really, I don't know, like possibly courageous, possibly stupid way of designing something.
Yeah, absolutely. I would completely agree. But I think the game did succeed, at least for me, to establish a hook very early on when you're first filling out the psychological exam. You know, it's not a cutscene, and it actually has nothing to do with the gameplay in the slightest.
But
that's not something I realized when I first started playing the game. So I think Silent Hill is an outlier in two regards. One, because I think the biggest dramatic change in how you view the story comes at the absolute end of the game. But two, I think the hook tries at least to implant itself before actually showing you anything that could give you a good assessment about what the game's going to be like actually playing it.
Yes, and I don't know how, you know, I'm really hesitant to, you know, to like laud it too much because it can go so wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
You don't want to have to go through an entire thing necessarily in order to... I mean, it's weird. I go back and forth on this issue. It's why I try not to write about games very much until I completely finish them.
Yeah.
Because there have been these weird outliers. Braid is another one that I... Even though I really liked Braid as I was playing it, and the moment I figured out how the rewind works in that first level, you know, that was a mechanical 10-minute intro. I still wasn't... Like replaying Braid has actually been more interesting to me, knowing how it ends up, yeah. Which is like, you know, veering off from what she was talking about. But you know, it's one of those oddities of the medium that kind of breaks the 10-minute rule, I think, because it's so different from film.
Yeah, absolutely. Another strange 10-minute mark, I think, is the opening cinematic to Fallout 3. Which is really kind of a... You have got a narrator. It's that guy who was in Hellboy. What's his name?
Ron Perlman.
Yes. So it has Ron Perlman narrating, you know, war never changes, and this is a terrible wasteland, and you're in Vault 101, and no one comes in, and no one comes out. And it's all dramatic. But it fits much more in Leanne Taylor's description of... not even history, but story, right? The hook that says, this is the world as it was, now what's going to happen? And it's describing, it's almost like, I suppose you could say that Fallout 3 is appealing to people who've played Fallout 1 and 2, but I don't think that's what it is. I think that the opening cinematic is trying to feed you this history that's already happened and hooking you with that alone, right? And it's weird to me because it's not really establishing anything. They don't say how nuclear fallout occurred. They don't describe, you know, the actors that were involved in it. It just says, this is the history that led to up to this point, and it's always been this way because that's the way that war is, and this is another turning point. And now, here you are. What's going to happen next? And it's strange because the innocent opening cinematic doesn't even show us any of the characters we're going to see in the game. It's just small, like, screenshots of devastation.
I think Leanne illustrates this well in her article that she actually uses Morrowind as an example, as well as Baldur's Gate and Diablo and StarCraft and Warcraft, and all of those games have in common that they don't really have very strong central characters. You're not playing with a couple of exceptions. I really don't know how closely people identify with, like, Jim Raynor, but he's not as iconic as someone like Mario or something like that. So I mean, these are all games that the cutscenes and cinematics vary so greatly from the actual gameplay.
Yeah. Do you think that it's easier to hook players on a world than it is to hook them on an individual story?
I mean, it might actually be the opposite, because it's hard to sum up. It's hard to make a pitch for an entire environment the same way you can make a pitch for a story. Like, you watch the old Warcraft intro, and it's like, Azeroth was a prosperous land. Humans ruled everything. Then some orcs came, and now here's the battle. Like, okay, I understand that quickly in a single sentence, but to truly understand, you know, the scope of what Warcraft is going to be takes a little bit of time, and they might need to... You know, you might need to throw people a little bit of a lifeline. Like, this is the underlying thing of what's going on, even though you'll be looking at something with, like, minuscule little characters and a lot of different items and text and stuff. You know?
But I think that's exactly why it is easier to hook on a big world, right? It's legible. It's something that you can say, oh, well, the orcs are here. All right, I get it. This is the atmosphere I'm going to be in, and I'll explore it on my own. I'm hooked, and if I want to explore that world, then I'm in it, and if I don't want to it, then I'll leave. As opposed to a game where... they have to convince me to even like this character. You know, you got a lot of people who played the latest Prince of Persia, for example, and didn't like the prince. And that's something that takes a while to get into. How do you hook someone to an individual character? Especially if that individual character is going to follow a dramatic arc, you know? Because they need to get to that arc in the first place. Uncharted 2, which I think is one of the coolest hooks in a cinematic and 10-minute mark, begins with Drake in a train that falls off a cliff, and then, you know, you have to climb up, and then you pass out in the snow, and it cuts to, I don't know how many days earlier, and then you play up to that point again. right?
Yeah.
That's a really cool moment, but it doesn't hook me because it says, oh, you know, Drake is this guy who has all these things, you know? Like, that's not why I was into it. It was because I wanted to know what got me into this position. What world am I in that I can be on a train in Nepal that just falls off a cliff?
I guess I'm having a hard time thinking about how you could give someone an entire world and it not being at least somewhat overwhelming or alienating. Like, even the Uncharted example, I feel like is a very limited example. You don't know he's in Nepal. You don't know what he's chasing after. All you know is that he's injured and that there's imminent danger.
Well, but that's the mystery element that that Taylor's talking about, right? How can they appeal to mystery when it comes to a character?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, her question is, what's happening now? And that question is the driving factor that makes me want to continue playing. Can they say, what's happening now to this character? I mean, I think you can, but I don't think it's as easy as saying, what's happening now to the entire world?
It's weird because I guess I just had the exact opposite reaction to the Uncharted example. Like, my first question was just like Drake. It was like, ugh, why is there blood? Why is this my blood? You know, like, I was like, oh yeah, why is he messed up right now? Like, I didn't. Whereas in a game like Red Dead Redemption, I felt much more interested in what was going on in the entire world, even though I was kind of stuck in this little cutscene / tutorial segment. You know, like, I got the sense that there was something bigger, but I felt like I was being sheltered from it a little bit in case the sheer enormity of it just, you know, would overwhelm me.
Yeah, I think Red Dead's a great example. And I don't remember exactly the opening cinematic, but I know the game begins with
Him on the train.
Right.
Like, you see the federal agents basically putting him on a train and telling him to go get what's-his-face in the
And you see the city, and then I would say that the 10-minute mark goes through the scene when you're on the train and they're talking about religion and the West. That's a fantastic hook, in my opinion. But it's establishing the world, and I suppose to some extent it's establishing the character within it as well.
As that was happening, for some reason I just felt very constrained by it. Like, I understand why one would take this approach to introducing a game, like doing it through story, doing it through a cutscene, but I think it's probably just as important to make people feel like they have an impact and are learning things rather than just being told things, rather than just being hyped up.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's my famous example. In Red Dead, I was trying to capture criminals alive for the bounty, and for the life of me, I could not figure out how to lasso them, like how to hogtie them. Like, I was going up to dudes and trying to punch them unconscious to put them on my horse. What I didn't know is that I just hadn't done the tutorial for the lasso yet, which means I could have never lassoed or, like, you know, otherwise non-lethally subdued anybody. So, like, it was very story-driven and setting me up for what was going on in the game, but it wasn't necessarily setting me up for what I was going to be doing in the game.
Well, so, I mean, you really liked Red Dead Redemption. When was that 10-minute hook? Was it 20 minutes in? 45 minutes in?
It was probably more like 20 hours in or something. I mean, like, it was when I really understood what was going on was when you go into Mexico.
But see, and that's fantastic because Mexico has its own hook.
Yeah.
So,
Mexico was, I went over this bridge that I never really knew existed in the world, that I never had any reason to go to. And then I realized that there was no loading screen. There was no, you know, warping or anything. I was just traveling into this huge portion of the map that I hadn't even really thought existed. And then I realized, oh, this is what this game is about.
Yeah.
Vast frontiers.
Yeah.
But it's weird because, you know, it took me like, you know, however long. I mean, it takes you like 5 to 10 hours or something to get to Mexico. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say that the first hook probably missed you until Mexico came around.
Yeah.
And that comes after a scene when you're on a raft and being shot at. you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you could go, well, yeah, you know, why are these federales shooting at me? This is what Mexico's all about. People just firing at me for no reason. And now some beautiful sunset and the landscape's different and I don't know where I'm at. You know, and you've already gotten a hold of the area you were in before. So it kind of I think it has to rehook itself too. When a game gets long enough, you need to be drawn in again. Because you'll just start getting, you know, you'll start getting bored or tired or what have you.
Yeah, yeah. I never thought about that. I mean, maybe that's an argument for shorter or at least more like mechanically concise games. You know, my thoughts just keep wandering back to, if you don't want to do it with a cutscene, how do you engage players in a timely manner? You know, so that it you don't have to get to the third world of Final Fantasy X and get the seventh crystal before you actually understand what's going on.
Yeah.
It seems this method, like the method relating to the movie example, seems so geared towards a story-driven experience.
Right. You know, she mentions mechanical hooks in the post, but I have a hard time imagining what that looks like, especially considering, you know, a lot of, you know, she says... She asks developers to think about how much of the core game mechanic you're giving to players early on. And if you don't give them enough, then you're not going to hook them with that mechanic. But when we're talking about the 10-minute mark in film, it's usually like a moment of crescendo. It's a moment of action or sudden mystery. It's when the camera pans out and you see the landscape that's being devastated by aliens, or there's a huge explosion.
Like, oh, that's the bad guy.
Or the main character gets kidnapped. You know, there's this particular... moment we can pinpoint, whereas in games, a lot of the mechanics build up over time and test you, and you know, you can get the core mechanic, but then there's all these little things that are added onto it. I can't imagine this moment of you know, suddenly knowing, and maybe Braid does that when you enter a level and there's a new game mechanic, and maybe that will hook you for that segment. But you know, I can't imagine it being something that would make much sense in the analysis of a game, unless it's specifically confined by the story or pertaining to the story.
I think one way games try to do that, and I think this is actually a little bit kind of, they go about it in reverse. They do what the Metroid series always does, which is start you off with a whole host of abilities and powers, and give it to you for a couple minutes and then take it away.
Yeah, that's a good example.
So maybe they just, you know, it's giving people a little bit of a taste to see what they want to build back up to. I mean, I don't think it's a very elegant example, or I don't think it's a very elegant way of doing it, because it takes away some of the surprise or some of the learning of it, because you already know that you're able to do a charge up beam because you did it in the first 5 minutes. So it's kind of a matter of time. Probably the most interesting way, I think, is allowing the players to pretty much do anything at any time, but not showing them the dynamics, like not showing them how the moves work together.
Yeah.
I've been playing two games recently. So one is I was just, you know, playing a crappy Flash version of the original Super Mario Brothers, and I was thinking about how the first couple screens in Super Mario Brothers basically give you a taste of everything you'll ever do in that game. Like, the first screen shows you nothing that's to the left. All the space is to the right.
Yeah.
So, like, it tells you, oh, you'll always be moving to the right here. Right is good. And then you get to a point where there's two rows of blocks, and they're higher. You know, they have altitude. So it suggests to you, oh, so this game is based on
jumping,
what level of the screen you're on, automatically, the first two rows. And then there's an enemy that travels to the left. So things traveling to the left are deadly. Things traveling to the right, like, you are good.
Yeah.
And then you get to a pipe, which is, you know, if you're a curious player, warps you somewhere. Yeah. So, like, there are secrets in this game, and secrets will come into play.
Yeah.
And then just kind of, like, shoves you through the levels and, like, you know, mixes and matches those various elements.
So you're saying, like, the first level would be their hook?
Yeah, their first level would be like, this is a little taste of everything that could happen in this game. And even some things that you don't know how they'll fit together. You know, there's puzzle pieces, like, how does a fire flower fit together with how Mario will interact with these left moving characters. Yeah. But you know, it's something that, again, it's not, you know, it's not cinematic or story driven. It's all dynamic.
Yeah. But even that, yeah, even that I say wouldn't be like a 10 minute mark, right? Cause there's not, it happens immediately and they're telling you this is all that the game is composed of. But it's not this profound moment. I mean, I guess you're right. It is a hook. It's absolutely a hook and a well-designed one at that.
Well, I mean, the thing is that the 10 minutes are, I guess we have to just turn it into a metaphorical 10-minute hook, because it's so individual for every game and based on what you want to do with it. You know, like something like WoW, I think, uses cinematics very well, because I feel like WoW's actual gameplay is very repetitive.
Yeah.
And not necessarily in a negative way, but like if you did everything you can do in WoW within the first 5 minutes, there wouldn't be that much mystery.
Yeah.
You know, it's the actual, it's who is Deathwing and all this stuff, yeah. You know, like it's getting people excited about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Hmm.
I mean, I think a lot of it just depends upon how much patience you think that your players have before they're given the thing that is going to keep them with it. And I think that it's much more variable in games than it is in film.
Yeah, yeah. And it's hard because you're dealing with expectations of agency. Like, you know, people expect, yeah, you know, I've been thinking about BioShock recently. People expect to have a certain impact on the world, and if they don't get that, then they feel like whatever the narrative hook was just lying to them.
And I think
which is quite arguable that it was.
True, yeah. And I think it's also Taylor mentions that maybe it's easier for IPs that are already existing, and I'd mentioned that earlier, but rethinking it now, maybe it's actually difficult because players want something new, right? When BioShock 2 comes out, you're going to have a new hook. Your hook can't be, look, it's Rapture, the way that the first game was. You know, you know that. Yeah. You've been there already. What's your second hook? You know, and in BioShock 2, presumably, it's the big sister.
Well, maybe before we close, we can throw out a game that does exactly what Taylor was describing, uses either, you know, some kind of backstory or cinematic to launch you into the game. Can you think of a specific game that accomplished this in the way that she was describing?
Sure. I would say that, let's see. I mean, just to go back to Uncharted 2, I think Uncharted 2 gives a fantastic hook. And we mentioned it already, but, you know, I want to stress that I played that scene and I'd never played the first Uncharted. And so I was hooked by the end of that moment when it goes back to the very beginning. I'm hooked already. I know that this game is going to have immense scale. I know that this character who's, you know, comedic is going to have this dramatic point where maybe he's going to die, maybe he's not. There's a huge amount of mystery on my part because I don't even know who Drake is, you know, and I want to know, you know, what type of guy gets himself in this terrible position. So that worked really well for me. And maybe it didn't work so much for people who had already played the first Uncharted.
Well, for me, I think I'll go the opposite direction of Uncharted's realism and say Little Big Planet was one of the games that, watching the opening, I mean, they just have this live-action cinematic that describes people dreaming and creating these worlds in their dreams. Yeah. And that got me really pumped to play that game and interested in what they were going to do with it. And it really, similar to the Blizzard cutscenes, it doesn't really have a whole lot to do with how the game actually feels to play.
Yeah, but it is kind of a design philosophy hook to some extent.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, they paint a picture of what this world is going to be like. Stephen Fry is going to be narrating it. And there's going to be lots of, you know, texture and lots of colors and type of mystical
and
things.
And it's going to emphasize community and creation.
Yeah. And it's something that has really nothing to do, you know, with actually pressing X to jump. But it suggests what the game is philosophically about. So anyway, that's my example.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
If anyone else wants to share examples of cutscenes or gameplay bits that hooked them, our email address is experiencepoints@gmail.com.
I'm also curious to know what games failed and what games you ran out of patience for when playing, and you can leave those games and your thoughts in the comment section to this podcast. You could also leave your thoughts in the comment section to any of our posts. We update the site Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings, so come on by and bring your friends.
All right, until next time, take it easy. Thanks for listening. Every time we disagree, there's a place to go to.